It's Wrecking Ball Radio. This is Stavin's Den.
All right, we are back. Well, that first segment was a lot heavier.
My head hurts.
I wanted to talk about the Marvel movies. That's what I had.
Yeah, let's do the Marvel movies now.
I got to talk about some of this heavy shit now.
My God.
I wanted to talk about, you know, bucket list of bands you wanted to see, shit like that.
Bands? Actually, I have bad news about that.
Of bands?
Yeah. My wife is... I'm taking my wife to see Breaking Benjamin for her birthday.
Okay.
No, I'm a Slayer fan. That's okay. Like laying on a bed of broken
glass. I took
glass.
My wife to see Duran Duran. It's all right.
Yeah, but that's Duran Duran.
Okay? No, it's terrible.
No, you get drunk and you just tone it out.
It was in a theater. You weren't getting drunk in a theater.
No, you're pretty much fucked. But
it's on Broadway. You do these things. It's okay.
I took my wife, being the lovely wife she is, wanted to experience some of her husband's music. So she not made me. I hate when people say, my wife made me. But she twisted my arm to take her to see Slayer with Lamb of God opening, which is just a barrage
of noise.
Yeah, no, it's just beautifulness. I love it.
Okay.
It's just beautiful music. She survived Lamb of God, but I would say four songs into Slayer, she was curled up in a ball on her seat. She just couldn't handle it. I'm sitting there, and I'm rocking out, loving it. They're playing some of my favorite songs. And the pyrotechnics are going, and I mean, it's just happening, man. I'm into it. And I'm like, wait, my wife's here. I haven't seen her for a while. I'm standing, you know, she's sitting next to me, and I look down, and she's like in a ball.
Yeah, it's the worst thing. Like when you bring somebody
I
with you
so bad.
To like a band, and you're loving it, and they hate it.
Yes.
It really bums you out.
It gets worse, too, because we're tailgating before, and I brought earplugs for her.
I told her,
I'm like, listen, baby, Slayer play. Oh, I used to DJ. And I'm like, please don't ever say that to me again. Yeah. With like Slayer versus, yeah, you know, you're playing like TKA in a fucking nightclub in White Plains somewhere in the 80s. So I'm like, baby, just put your earplugs in your pocket so I know you have them. No problem. We tailgate, yada, yada. So she's curled into a ball, and I'm screaming, like, where are your earplugs? And she gives me the finger, like, back over at the car. And I'm like, fuck. I had to pull her out of there. I missed the second half of the Slayer concert.
That's rough. You're a good man.
Dude, I'm serious.
You're a good man.
And I'm like, I'm walking her out, and we just get right out of the, you know, the arena. It was open air arena, and they start playing a song, Chemical Warfare, which is one of my favorites. It's a song about World War I. And a lot of people think Slayer is advocating what they're singing about, not realizing they're not. You know, Jeff Henneman was a nice Jewish guy, and Tommy Array is a nice Argentinian Catholic dude. They're singing about dark historical shit, like real stuff, okay? And a lot of people get that confused, unfortunately. They're not advocating this shit. Angel of Death, for example, you know, Auschwitz and all that shit. You know, they're singing about chemical warfare and World War I, things of that nature. They have a song, Dead Skin Mask, about a serial killer.
You know what I've often felt is... the Holocaust needs a soundtrack.
But again, it's not advocate. If you listen to the words, they're damning this shit.
I understand, you know, that.
So anyway, I get her, and they start ripping Chemical Warfare. And I start mouthing the words, and my wife's like, you're going back in. I'm like, sweetheart, if we go back in there, you're going to the hospital. I'm like, you're done.
It's too much.
Yeah, you're done, baby. So got her in the car. So anyway, to right the wrong... I have to sit through Breaking fucking Benjamin.
They'll be fine. They don't. The concert can't be that long.
Everybody sounds like Bush. That whole genre sounds like. Remember 1990s Bush?
I didn't listen to those bands.
Me neither. That's my point.
You'll be fine.
Oh, no, I'm not going to survive. So actually,
I go to Broadway musicals. I won't be fine. I went to 7 hours of a Harry Potter musical. I've never read any of the books. I've never seen any of the movies.
Oh my God.
Twice I tried to watch the movies in the movie theater. I fell asleep.
Really?
You do things for loved ones.
I know. I fell asleep during a few movies.
Listen,
you look on
your phone. You look around. You make some mental notes to make fun of people next time you get together with your friends.
Honestly, man,
you'll be fine.
And I can't even drink because we're going to be out of state. And the next morning we have to go whale watching. Cape Cod. I know. So I can't even get shit-faced drunk and tone it out. Yeah.
You'll be fine.
I have to stay dry.
You'll be fine.
And go whale watching in the morning.
You'll be fine.
I sound like an old fart, but yeah.
I saw Duran Duran.
That's rough. I wouldn't have even done that in the 80s when it was actually cool to see Duran.
I never liked that band. Duran Duran has always changed the dial for me.
No, but didn't you see, what's his name? Oh, my God, you recently sucked on Facebook. Hold on. Who did you see?
Manilow? People love
yeah,
Manilow.
Barry Manilow. Oh, my God. I saw that.
I sing the songs.
Oh, please don't. Not now. Not now. I can't.
People love Manilow.
No, we just argued about politics for a fucking hour. I can't do Barry Manilow.
If you're in touch with yourself, you know, you can
live.
You can rock out.
If you can't get laid and you touch yourself.
No.
You can be a Barry Manilow fan.
No, listen, you can like Slayer and all that noise.
If you don't like Slayer, you suck.
And all that volume, and like some, and plenty of people like Manilow. Listen, plenty of people like the blues. Yeah, it's amazing how many of these musicians that we like. Well, the blues though.
It's got soul. Manilow is. Oh God,
it's nice and schlocky. I'll tell you what, it was the funniest fucking concert
I
went
to.
He's very
hysterical. I would have been on the floor crying and laughing.
No,
at
he's
the
actually
same
really
time.
Funny. He's actually he's sincerely funny.
Really,
he's sarcastic. He's self deprecating.
Okay.
It was real, and it was a really cool show. That fucking 3D effects.
Oh, God. As a Motley Crue fan, go see Barry Manilow.
I'll tell you what, Manilow puts on a better show than Motley Crue.
No, don't say that out
loud. Here's the difference between Barry Manilow and Vince Neil. Barry can still sing the songs.
Yeah. Dude, have you seen a picture of Vince Neil lately?
I listen. I'm not going to make fun of the guys. Talk about whale watching.
Dude, but, I know, man. My good. Can you?
Right. He's old. It's all right.
He's had more pussy than a friggin' kennel.
All right. So this is some heavier shit.
What do you, oh, great. As opposed to our last conversation.
Well, I didn't know. Like I said, I know we're going to talk about guns and politics. I want to talk about Marvel movies and what was the best series of movies. But we're not doing that now. We're going to talk about hungry military families.
Hungry, yeah, that's a little more the, yeah, I'll play a little bit clip. More heavy than.
Des Greenmeyer has four kids and a husband in the Navy who's been deployed for nearly 8 months. She knew life as a military spouse would have challenges, but she never imagined the biggest one would be feeding her kids.
Today was not a good sale day. We just kind of have to get creative. Some days we have, bread drive.
That's right. To make ends meet, Desiree and thousands of other military families around the country rely on the kindness of strangers. At Dewey Elementary, the Feeding San Diego truck arrives every 2 weeks, full of fruits and vegetables, where a team of volunteers quickly sets up a distribution line. Families arrive early. Nearly everyone here is military.
So I would say check to check, but pretty darn close. If you sneeze hard, that's it. If a flat tire goes out, that's it. You see what I'm saying? So you don't have much. Probably got a little 100, 200 lingering, but it's literally, that's it.
Tanya McMillan is the principal at Dewey Elementary.
We are 80% military and 70% free and reduced lunch. So essentially what you're telling me is that members of our U.S. military are paid so poorly that their children qualify for free lunch and breakfast.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, pretty sad.
I mean, would you tell people that little kids whose parents are on the front line for the rest of us, serving, go to bed hungry sometimes. It's shocking.
Yeah. Go to bed hungry and lonely because their parents are gone sometimes.
We ask these kids to carry a lot.
Yeah. Yes, we certainly do.
Dan Meyer is well aware of that. As a communications officer in the Navy, he makes $34,279 a year before taxes. That's just under the national poverty level for a family of six. The military does pay for their housing, a significant benefit, but they still can only make ends meet with help. Families struggling with food insecurity is something Vince Hall, CEO of Feeding San Diego, knows all too well. Last year, this food rescue group provided 26 million meals.
Many of these families are the hardest working people I've ever met in my life. They're focused on skipping meals so that their kids have something to eat.
Planning their groceries down to the very last snack and watching every penny.
Some of those people are military families where the kids are hungry on a routine basis.
Yeah, I take great pride in the work that we do here, but I take no pride in the fact that our country stations families in San Diego and doesn't pay them enough money to live in San Diego. And chances are, while the service member is deployed in a combat area wearing the uniform of our country, they're going to be worried that their family back home is living below the poverty level and doesn't have enough to eat.
And it's not just San Diego. NBC News obtained records from the Department of Defense. They show that one in three children attending schools on military bases run by DOD are eligible for free and reduced lunch. A group working with military families to get them the help they say they need tells us the problem is widespread.
We've identified that there are food pantries on or near almost every military base in this country. They're serving hundreds of military families each month.
Something he says the military tries to keep as quiet as possible.
I think for DOD, this is a public relations issue. They would rather it just kind of went away or was dealt with quietly.
We wanted to talk to the Department of Defense about all of this, but despite repeated requests, they told us no one was available for an interview. Instead, they sent us an email telling us that the problem is minimal, that military members are very well paid, that there is a subsidized grocery store on each base, and that families can avail themselves of the financial literacy training the military provides.
The position of the Pentagon is that if you plan well enough, your husband is being paid a competitive wage and everybody should just be fine, that the two of you are not doing an adequate job planning.
My husband and I have taken advantage of resources available to us. We have met with financial counselors provided by Fleet and Family Services. We have done that work.
No matter how financially literate they are, there's just so much stretching they can do.
I think it is a national outrage.
Congresswoman Susan Davis of San Diego and Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, a former Army helicopter pilot, have joined forces, introducing legislation that would lift some military families higher above the poverty line. Minimal problem, as the military says?
It's not a minimal problem. Frankly, instead of ignoring it or diminishing it, we should be fixing it. We should say, if you come to the military, your kids are going to get good education, you're going to get good housing, and your kids are going to be fed. The military is an amazing place to work. I love the Army. So let's compensate our troops who defend us so that they can do their jobs without worrying about whether or not their kids have empty bellies.
So the estimate in order to fund what you think is needed, it's somewhere between $20 and $30 million.
Yes. It's a drop in the bucket when you look at the entire DOD budget, which is in the $735 to $750 billion range.
Back in San Diego, after 212 days at sea, Desiree is about to welcome her sailor back home. At Dewey Elementary, the Meyer kids are about to get a big surprise. Daddy's home. Two beautiful.
All right, we'll give you some stats on this. It's pretty enraging. Russ is getting pissed off.
I'm so sick to my stomach.
As well,
just
you should
that
be.
Piece.
So, data shows that during the 2018-2019 school year, a third of children at Department of Defense run schools on military bases in the United States. More than 6,500 children were eligible for free or reduced lunches at one base, Georgia's Fort Stewart. 65% were eligible.
Oh, my God.
At a school where almost 80% of students are the children of active duty military personnel, more than 70% are eligible for free and reduced lunches. The biweekly free groceries often make the difference between struggling to pay the bills or going hungry. The housing allowance, which can range widely depending on where a service member lives, is often enough to push a family out of the eligibility bracket for federal food assistance.
Oh, my God.
Data from the 2017 Census Bureau shows that more than 16,000 active duty service members receive food stamps known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which we're going to talk more about later on.
All right.
They've identified that there are food pantries on or near almost every military base in this country, and there's nothing wrong with that going to a food pantry when you need emergency help. But there's no reason that those who are serving in the armed forces should have to do that on a routine basis.
Absolutely.
The Undersecretary for Personnel and Readiness at the Pentagon is the Defense Department's key policy advisor on pay, benefits, recruitment and morale, and also oversees the agency that runs schools on military bases. But the role has been vacant since former Undersecretary Robert Wilkie left to lead the Department of Veterans Affairs years ago. President Trump has not nominated a successor.
So there's no one at the wheel.
There is.
That's what I just read.
There's somebody in acting.
Acting means, yeah, acting.
So you don't have as much power.
God, exactly.
And Trump says he likes acting ones. You know, Trump, so this is part of Trump's strategy.
Oh.
Not necessarily to target these families.
I'm not going on the anti-Trump thing, but this is bullshit. I'm really aggravated about it.
Duckworth, Tammy Duckworth, Republican senator from Hawaii, I think. Military.
Right.
Military vet amputee.
All right. Right on.
Duckworth said it's unfair to compare military families, which are usually single income, to the average U.S. family, which is dual income. Often one spouse is following the other from base to base, she said, and that spouse who's following around can't actually grow a career. They're at a disadvantage. And to say, yeah, well, she's staying at home, she should just do better with the budget, you know, that's really insulting. She's got a point.
She does.
The Defense Department.
Being a military wife or husband is not.
No.
No fucking pleasure cruise.
No. And by the way, let me just take a little aside.
My God.
The reason why I donate to the charity I do, the military, National Military Family Association, is because when I was overseas, I talked to the military, the people who I was performing in front of, and the thing they always worried about was their families.
Of course.
So
of course.
This is on
their
mind.
Yeah, right on, man.
So their stipend's supposed to increase each year to keep up with inflation.
Cost of living, the COLA.
But for the fourth year in a row, the food allowance has gone up by less than 1%.
That's unacceptable.
All right, so here's the thing. It says so much about us as a country.
Correct. That's what makes me sick.
When we like to put our military on a pedestal, especially since 9/11. And you know what? I completely support them. You guys listen to the show know that. But you can't really put them on a pedestal when you got their wife and kids or husband and kids, you know, having to go to food pantries all the time. Having
terrible.
To script, pay them absolutely a fucking terrible. Wage. You buy them tanks that they don't want.
Honestly.
The Pentagon tells you all
the soldiers are telling them we don't need these.
No, the Pentagon says we don't need tanks. No, because it's in a certain senator, whoever that senator is, district, we're going to put more tanks and shit.
No,
but
it's
you
been
can't,
going on for decades.
Right, but you can't make sure the families are well taken care of.
Horseshit, unacceptable. That's sickening.
And also people need to think about this. How good are you going to be at your job if you're constantly worried that 7,000 miles
your family's not eating, your children aren't eating.
Exactly.
Not even are they safe, are they starving?
Right. I would think that would make it harder to do your job, which is to protect
absolutely.
The national security. So we're actually doing
yeah, we're hurting ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, we're, you know, they wanted to wear, the problem is you found this on a localized
no, not local. NBC
or
News.
Or an NBC clip. Sorry, an NBC clip. But you know what? I watch some of the bigger networks. Nothing. Where if some Pop-Tart
well, this is one. Of, this is on one of their daily shows. This is one of the national. It wasn't NBC 4 News. This was like a big story they did.
Okay.
NBC News, like on the nightly news or whatever, one of the morning right. shows.
This story should be getting run every day until this friggin' problem's solved. Because you know what right now? Who's that guy? Lopez. Said something stupid. Mario Lopez, the act. Yeah. What I'm saying, here's my point. When some Pop-Tart says something stupid, it's all over the news every hour for two friggin' months.
But the Department of Defense.
Where's this? I haven't heard about this yet. When did you get this clip?
I found this clip a couple weeks ago. It's a new clip.
That's horrifying. I watch the news several times. I don't sit there, you know, whacking off the Fox News, but I watch the news several times a week.
Here's why you haven't heard about this. The Department of Defense doesn't want you to know about this. They're downplaying.
Well, like I said, if some Pop-Tart said something inappropriate or stupid, or Trump had a sexist or racist tweet, what happened? Roseanne Barr, the Ambien tweet. 3 fucking months we heard about the Ambien tweet. You got hungry kids. The parents are overseas defending our country, and they're worried about how they're going to eat. I can't, David, I'm sorry. Some things I just can't swallow.
And I think it also discourages people from enlisting.
Absolutely.
Why would you do this? I mean, first of all, you're making a great sacrifice. But
yes.
But to know that your family
correct.
Is going to have to struggle while you're doing
if you're
this,
deployed, yeah. You're on deployment, and yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's horseshit. I know many, many. I can't even say some. My goodness. I know many military families. And I'm so this just surprises me.
Here's what
the
I
sacrifice they
here's
make
what I want you to think about. The next time we see some politicians railing about some athlete taking a knee or not standing for the national anthem and proclaiming their patriotism, politicians, people who can actually do something about this shit.
So
I want
the power
you,
of the pen. Yeah, think about this and say.
Think
screw
about
you,
this.
Yeah. There's a hungry kid right now out in Camp Pendleton.
There's thousands of hungry kids.
Go get him some
food. So next time you see a politician standing, telling what a real patriot is, what a real American is. Remember, they're not doing shit. Not only do they fuck the veterans, which we all know about.
Yes.
They're
going
fucking
on for years.
The active duty. I want you to think about this. That's why I'm bringing it to attention. People need to know
they
this
need,
shit.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
I did not know. And
I bring good stories.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm a, not every day, but I'm a regular news watcher. Unbelievable, man. And that seat's got to be filled. If you could email that to me.
I did. I emailed you the link.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
When for the stories. I emailed you. What stories do you
want? I scrolled through them.
I emailed you links. Okay.
I don't prepare before I come in. I just get a general idea of what we're discussing. But I would love to write a letter to my local congressman.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, like that's and Tammy Duckworth, yeah. who's a veteran Democrat, is the one who's leading the fight on this.
Good. Good you for know. Her. Hey, listen. When it comes to shit like that, party doesn't matter.
I agree.
No, that's an American problem.
I agree.
Like red and blue.
I agree
that's
with
you. That's a purple problem.
I agree with you.
You know?
But I want you to think about this the next time people are proclaiming their patriotism and what being a patriot means.
I get it. I mean, what weaving this into is just how aggravating it is for some people to see, privileged people taking a knee during a national anthem.
No. The point is, the point
it's apples and oranges.
People who
the next time I see a politician saying, a national politician saying
I'm talking about.
How much he loves it, has nothing to do with some overprivileged douchebag making $5 million a year to kick a ball.
To preach about patriotism.
Yeah, yes, they do.
This is patriotism.
That's patriotism. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
That's red and blue.
Next time they're talking
Republican
about some fucking athlete in a national anthem, go, hey, how come our military's families are going hungry? Why aren't you solving that problem?
Unacceptable.
Get off right Twitter. Write a bill.
Yeah.
That's the solution.
Not right off. You want to talk about emergency relief fund?
Yeah.
Now you fucking got one. Go.
All right. Cruelty to the homeless. I told you, there's a lot of heavy
cruelty to the homeless. It's unfortunate. That's been going on for years.
You're not going to believe the shit people are doing.
It's been going on. You remember back when we were kids, what was going on in the city? They were beating the shit out of killing homeless people.
They're still doing it.
Yeah, no shit. It doesn't go away. You got
sick
people.
Efforts are to drive away people who are homeless have increasingly made headlines as communities grapple with escalating crisis. I don't have a fucking story on this. Hold on.
You just throw your paper. You threw something.
No. Yeah. Anyway.
Where's the paper? Script.
So West Palm Beach, Florida City officials.
West Palm Beach is a very nice city.
Recently started blasting the children's song Baby Shark. First of all, that's cruel and unusual punishment. And raining tacos. Is that like a Trump thing? I don't even know. Is that like a Trump thing?
What the hell, raining tacos?
I feel like...
I try not to be dirty-minded, but
Trump's get-off music at his next rally. Just to make sure everybody's fucking riled up about the impending invasion.
Holy shit, raining tacos.
By the way, if it rains
I'm thinking
tacos,
about something totally different than immigration, but that's all the right, funny
get
stuff.
All right, so they play these songs and repeat to discourage people from sleeping near a waterfront banquet hall at night. Convenience stores in Oregon and California have also raised eyebrows for installing speakers that blast music or an ear-piercing noise outside to homeless people. In July, Oakland, California, sparked a protest when he offered to pay homeless people to leave the area in a failed stunt he later claimed was a game. Some citizens have tried taking matters into their own hands, whether it be pouring water on them from rooftops, holding public marches or protests, or using violence. Earliest month, the Calumet. Well, this is from 2004, but
it all sounds like violence to a degree.
November authorities say anger of homeless residents in Seattle neighborhood led a man to fatally shoot a 26-year-old homeless man whom he had accused of breaking a window at his home, months early. Last September, four men sleeping outdoors in Santa Monica and Los Angeles were found beaten to death. A man arrested in the attacks has since been charged with those four deaths as well as attempted murder of four others.
Man.
Vigilante justice is not unusual, said Maria Forscarini's founder and executive director of the National Law Center of Homelessness and Poverty. So it's pretty prevalent. There's more creative efforts are part of a broader trend of private and public entities trying to make it impossible for homeless people to exist. This comes as housing prices across the country rise faster than wages and affordable homes become harder to find.
Yeah. Okay.
I have
another take on it, but all right.
More people are feeling the squeeze on tenable housing costs and the people who are poorest become homeless. It's fucking expensive to live here.
Yeah, it is.
America's primary response to homelessness is still criminalization. A 2015 study of Washington State found that cities with higher rates of income inequality enforced homeless crimes, such as loitering, obstructing sidewalks, and scavenging more frequently.
Yeah.
As the evidence of inequality starts to become clear in the form of visible poverty, neighborhoods react by increasing complaints and enforcing more punitive laws to get rid of the evidence, said the study's editor Sarah Rankin, director of Homeless Rights Advocacy Project at Seattle University School of Law. The strategy of criminalizing homelessness is explicitly designed to hide poverty, not alleviate it, she said. According to the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty Survey, 120 of America's 187 largest cities outlaw vagrancy, a nebulous term that invites targeted harassment of homeless people. 99 other cities prohibit sitting in public. 22 have made it illegal for residents to share food with homeless people.
That's encouraging. I figured it should encourage them.
What? They're not fucking geese.
Yeah, I know.
They're human beings.
It's charity. I mean,
they're fucking human beings.
I'm a nice Catholic boy. That's called charity. But yeah,
what would Jesus do? He fed the homeless.
He'd give somebody a sandwich.
Yeah. Since 2000,
back then some matzah, whatever.
Whatever was handy.
Take some water, turn it to wine. Here's some matzah. You're good.
Some fishes, some loaves. Jesus was on it. Jesus is all right by me. Since 2011, the report notes prohibitions on panhandling have increased by 25%, and laws against people sleeping in their cars have more than doubled. Cities are also depicting an increasing portion of their dedicating an increasing portion of their resources to enforcing those laws. In Portland, 50% of the city's arrests are now of homeless people.
That's ridiculous.
In Los Angeles,
50% of police resources.
There's more.
Are being allocated
to arresting homeless people.
Holy shit.
In Los Angeles, police issued more than 14,000 citations to residents with transient addresses in 2016.
So they're finding people with no money and no residence.
Yes.
That just makes so much sense.
A 31% increase in just 5 years.
Wow.
Other cities have started cracking down on service providers themselves, requiring soup kitchen volunteers to get food handling certificates and barring charities from entering parks to hand out sandwiches.
Assholes.
My wife and daughter had to go through a whole process, like 3 hours.
Yeah.
To volunteer. That's why I couldn't do it. It was a Tuesday night. Many of the cities making it more difficult for homeless people to survive outside aren't attempting to give them anywhere else to go. Boulder, Colorado has around 440 homeless people and only 280 shelter beds. Nonetheless, police handed out 1,767 camping citations last year. Seattle, where homeless people...
Camping citations in Colorado. That's just... it's location appropriate, but still fucking retarded.
Still retarded.
Wow.
Seattle, where homeless people outnumber shelter beds roughly 2-1, performed 527 homeless sweeps in 2018 alone, invading encampments, confiscating belongings, and shooing residents on the streets with nothing but their clothes. So even the meager shit they had,
they took that, right?
During one such sweep in 2016, police in Denver confiscated people's blankets on a frigid night, claiming they were evidence of violations of the city's camping ban. See, now we talk about the bad police. This is just the following orders. Use your fucking discretion.
Honestly.
These are just outrageous examples of needless cruel treatment, Foscarana said, of the response by public officials, which she warned sets a bad example that sends a message to private citizens, private individuals, that it's okay that homeless people are less than human, that treating them inhumanely is okay. Courts have consistently struck down the ordinance cities are using to perform tent sweeps and issue homeless citations. In September, Trump's favorite district, the Ninth District, Ninth Circuit
Court of Appeals,
declared that Boise's no camping law amounted to cruel and unusual punishment because the city had four times more homeless people than shelter beds. Hey, good for the Ninth.
Yeah, right on.
This ruling essentially declared that all areas within the Ninth Circuit, which includes California, Washington, and Arizona, are not allowed to arrest or punish people for sleeping on public private property unless they are provided adequate and relatively accessible indoor accommodations. Boise said it will appeal the court's decision to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
The court is not expected to make a decision, and it will hear the case in the fall. So we'll find out. Anti-panhandling laws have been struck down numerous times on free speech grounds, and laws prohibiting people from sleeping.
Free speech grounds.
Yeah, why not? They're speaking.
That's an interesting approach.
And you can't prohibit them from sleeping in their own cars, as that's been discriminatory. Politicians typically cast encampment sweeps and mass arrests as humanitarian interventions, a final merciful push for shelter-resistant homeless people to make the leap into housing, employment, and rehab. In reality, however, these campaigns are rarely paired with meaningful assistance.
That's the problem. They're doing something to have an effect, but the solution's not there.
So going to the fines.
That's the problem. Yeah, you're going to find people with no fucking money or a place to live. That really makes sense.
In 2018, Los Angeles Times investigation found a $35 fine for sleeping on the sidewalk typically ballooned to $238 after the addition of court and administrative fees.
Unbelievable.
If they had that type of money, they'd get a hotel room.
Honestly.
Because homeless people, by definition, lack the ability to pay the fees and fixed addresses to receive court documents, arrests often result in ballooning fines and outstanding warrants. 22% of the LAPD's homeless arrests, the largest category by far, were failure to appear in court. It's also costly for policing now.
That's how they're bringing them in.
Policing now in Salt Lake City takes up 85% of Salt Lake City's policing.
Oh, dude.
Dealing with the homeless. So they spent $10 million on relocating people who live in unauthorized encampments. So you get the drift.
I get it. There's two things I can say about it. One, some of these cities.
Oh, well, let me tell you what Maxine Waters is trying to do. I know you're not a fan of her.
The cowboy hat chick? Is that the one?
I don't know.
She wears the bedazzled cowboy hats?
Possibly, yes.
I hope that's not her.
Listen, we're talking about solutions.
Yeah.
So she proposed introducing the Ending Homelessness Act of 2019.
Bill, ended, but I would love to hear this.
A bill that would appropriate $13.27 billion in emergency relief funding over 5 years. The money would fund several critical federal housing programs and initiatives for the homeless, including the creation of 410,000 new units and housing for people experiencing homelessness.
All right.
In the richest country in the world, it's simply unacceptable that we have people living on the street, she said in a release. Today, there are over 500,000 people experiencing homelessness nationwide. Nearly 160,000 are children.
500,000?
What?
500,000 nationwide?
Today they're over 500,000.
All right.
Nearly 160,000 of them are children.
Minors.
And nearly 38,000 are veterans who we have failed to support for their service to our nation.
It's just fucking crazy.
So I say Maxine Waters.
Yeah,
you
know.
He knows. But then, hey, at least somebody's trying to do something.
Maybe if she presented herself differently and toned some of her speech down, decent ideas like this would be a little bit more palatable. It's like Donald Trump coming to you and saying, you know, what a good idea, you know.
When he has a good idea, give him kudos.
I really don't like the guy.
I think he's a rapist and a racist.
So you just said it's bad character for me to support him.
No, but he does something good. Listen,
Warner's a nut, but she brings up a couple good points there.
Have you ever been homeless?
No.
Nor have I.
I have not had that, but I do know people who have.
Okay. Are these good people, a lot of them?
Yes. One is a lifelong friend of mine since I was a teenager. Just made some bad choices. He moved out of state. And my wife and I, I'm sorry, I had a little, I step when I talk about this stuff sometimes, helped him out. And, you know, I'm
so good.
Middle class.
Good people can wind up in tough luck.
Absolutely, but that's my next point. There's two things going on here. And here's where most people get the issue of homelessness confused. First, I do want to say some of the cities out west asked for this problem because they opened up the floodgate.
Floodgate of what?
I.e. homelessness. I.e. Portland, San Francisco, they started making it okay, they were lax with it, and then all of a sudden, boom.
What do you mean by okay?
Not okay. They stopped. In New York, they manage homelessness a little bit different. Okay? Like, for example, well, these are the Giuliani years.
It was actually, it seemed
the way.
I don't know if there was less homeless. They weren't on the streets.
No, that's the problem. No. They were. They were in certain areas. Like, for example.
So Giuliani did a better job of hiding it than de Blasio does.
Giuliani did a better job of managing it.
How about solving
de Blasio? You can't, but here's the thing. You can help it. And that's my next quote, my next point. A lot of these cities out west weren't managing it. And now it's become a problem where a lot of their policing budget is going toward managing a problem that spiraled out of control in the past decade or so. And it is something I've been exposed to a few times following the news. However, in a lot of these cases, you're not as much dealing with poverty as you are with mental illness.
There's some of that.
And that, no, I think it's a big problem. I did papers on this in college.
I can tell you, my wife and daughter, there's some of that there.
Yes.
There's some drug use. But then there's also a lot, there's a lot of the other where it's not that.
And that's different. That's poverty. Yeah, you're talking about poverty. I'm talking about people who just
came out of rehab.
Correct. But I think in a lot of, and again, it's some I did research on this in college for classes. A lot of the problem is that counties, again, I'm a New Yorker, I'm speaking as a New Yorker, their mental health, Department of Mental Health budgets are so lean.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to have an impact. And if we can at least address, well, first of all, the veteran issue, that just doesn't exist. If we can address it from, include the mental health perspective, the mental health issues behind a significant percentage of homeless cases, I think it would be helpful.
Of course it would be helpful.
You know, I think, you know, poverty is definitely a part of it, you know, but there's different reasons why people wind up in poverty. And a lot of the people in poverty in these cities, especially in the urban areas, from what I've actually researched, you know, my research goes back to the 90s, they had mental health issues, and the counties weren't equipped to deal with it.
You've got to remember not to go too far. Reagan closed down a lot of the places where the mentally
ill. Who did?
Reagan.
I was a kid. No, I'm talking about now.
But I'm saying that a lot of those people were onto the streets.
Well, and ironically, that also has to do, going back to the veteran issue.
Yeah, we don't take care of our vets.
A lot of those guys come back after serving, and either they have issues because they were deployed, or they have just have issues readjusting the civilian life.
Here, I'll give you an example of how this how this whole thing works, about like being homeless and how the fees add up. Because I only shared this on the air last week for the first time. So about a year or so ago, maybe going on two at this point, I got a speeding ticket in town.
Uh-huh.
Speeding ticket in town.
Been there, yeah.
called up a police buddy of mine, not from this town.
All right.
Police buddy of mine, go, hey, can you call the officer who gave me the ticket and maybe work something out as a friend? Yeah. Typical Jersey thing, New York. You know, you try to get so he makes a phone call.
All right.
So I got to go to court. I got to appear. I don't know what type of deal I'm going to get.
No, you know,
have no idea what type of deal. So the officer doesn't show up, which is fine. Still don't know what type of deal I'm going to get. I'm expecting to pay something, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, he screwed up. Whatever. Yeah.
So they tell me that I'm not going to pay anything. My friend worked at the... I'm not going to pay anything.
Oh, wow.
I just got to appear before the judge.
Yes.
So I'm there, and I see people going up. I'm like one of the last ones there for some reason.
The guy's not going to pay anything.
So a little bit before me, there's this homeless couple, and they were there because I guess they were sleeping in their car, and the car wasn't parked where it was supposed to be, or they got a ticket. So...
Okay.
I think it was a $100 fine, and I was looking at these people, and I knew they didn't have it. I knew they didn't have the money to pay for it. Like $100 to you or me, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So what I did, not to toot my own horn, so what I did when I got called up, they're like, listen, you're not going to get charged anything, you're free to go. I go, hey, do me a favor, take this $100, pay off theirs.
Good for you.
They were already gone.
Good for you.
So they don't even know who paid for it, which is fine.
That's fine. Yeah, you don't want to pat them back. Yeah, you're just doing the right thing.
Right. Like I said, I didn't even talk.
That says a lot about your character.
Thank you.
Good for you.
I didn't even talk about it on the show. I didn't really tell very many people when it happened, but it's a couple years now.
That's an amazing thing.
Well, it's not amazing. It's just.
David, a lot of people don't get it. You know why? It's not anybody's problem. And you know what? And again, this is something I hear a lot from my side. I pay taxes. I'm overtaxed. We have a social welfare in the system country. You know, I hear it all the time. But you know what? There's still people who are hurting.
Yeah, you got to help people.
You know?
So my point is not what I did. My point is, realistically, I don't know how they were going to track down these people to pay the money.
Yeah, honestly.
But I guess they were. But listen, those people, even if they did have that $100 after several weeks,
uh-huh.
and they say they could work out a payment plan, you know how much money?
Yeah, that's how you and I spend the $5,000.
Right. It sets them back.
Yeah, yes.
So my point with this story is to constantly find these fucking people.
Finding people with no money.
What are you doing? Exactly. You can't make it.
That's the whole case the Ninth Circuit was making, is that they're criminalizing.
Right.
Because again, if you can't afford the fine, the next step is jail.
Right.
So,
it shouldn't be criminal.
That's what happens, yeah.
So,
being poor is not a crime.
I would make this
being
argument.
Being mentally insane is not a crime. Being a veteran who can't acclimate back to civilian society is not a crime.
I would make this argument, which I never really thought of until this article. But I would make this. Every American deserves a home. What that home looks like, I don't know. Not everybody can live in Mar-a-Lago. That's fine. But, you know, every American deserves some place where they can lay their head down and feel safe. And the fact that we don't do that says so much about us. Because we like to say we're the best and we're the richest and all this. But, I mean, the past two stories.
Because there's always somebody else who'll be there to do it.
Well, that's what the churches will do. A lot of
the charities that used to do stuff like that when you and I were younger and that were actually effective,
mm-hmm.
okay, well, they're not around anymore. Here we are 40 years later, and you know what? I pay taxes, let the government handle it. There's no personal, I'm sounding like fucking Newt Gingrich now, but it's my point. There's no sense of personal responsibility to where, you know what, hey, $100 is a pinch, but you know what, I'm going to help somebody out today.
Yeah.
It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore.
But I think America needs to look in the mirror and go, we're cruel.
Okay.
We are cruel. When you hear
cruelty, it's fucked up. And again, my point is most of these people have mental illness.
When you think about what the stories I read where people are pouring water on them.
Yeah, it's fine. That's crazy.
What are you fucking... Now, listen.
That's fucking crazy.
Recently, I've started to give a buck here, a buck there, where I usually just walk by them. But now once in a while, and I don't do it every time. Yeah. I wish I did it more. Somebody, I'll just give them a buck. Because you know what? If you're out, sometimes they're scammers. Yeah. But you know what? If you're out there that bad asking for a buck, let me give you the fucking buck. Yeah. I don't get a dollar slice of pizza. Yeah. It'll be fine.
I don't do money. I buy food, for example.
Which we just heard it would be criminalized.
Yeah, I know. If a cop ever gave me a ticket.
Can you imagine?
According to my religion, I am obligated to do that. I'm sorry.
That would be an interesting argument.
Absolutely. That is my First Amendment right. That is my freedom of religion.
That's an interesting argument.
My Bible says I am obligated to give that person food.
That's an interesting. I like that argument.
Really? That's my Constitution protecting my actions.
But to think about, we're criminalizing people giving food. Now, I'll tell you something interesting. My wife and daughter are working in the food kitchen. They cannot let the homeless, because sometimes they have extra food. They cannot let the homeless walk out. They can let them walk out with like an apple and stuff like that, or wrap cheese sticks.
Take a doggy bag, yeah.
Right? Because God forbid somebody gets sick, gets spoiled. There's all these things that we don't even think of. When you just go, if maybe we could protect the churches or whatever organizations giving the food, and go, you know, if somebody gets sick, we got this legal bill. You know what? We're not going to zap you. Because more often than not, it's just people need food.
Exactly. Food, shelter. I was very upset in my hometown of Monroe. A group of very good people ran a homeless shelter during the winter months over at, help me out. It wasn't at my church. It was another church in town. Sacred Heart. So, Church of Sacred Heart, Monroe. But what was happening was, and again, this goes back to my argument, you're not just dealing with poverty. A lot of these people have mental illness. The cigarette burns in the carpet and on the church pews, needles they were finding.
Sure.
Other signs of things that you and I would consider not socially acceptable, okay? And
was somebody wearing a MAGA hat in church?
No, never. That's only allowed in Kentucky. But Mitch McConnell's district. But
Moscow Mitch.
Fucking guy. He really is a piece of work.
Mm. He broke his shell the other day. Did you hear that? He fell and broke his shell.
What happened?
I think he like broke his hip or shoulder or something. He fell at home.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him.
I don't.
I'm a Republican. I think the guy's a douchebag.
All right, off of Mitch. We're talking about better than Mitch McConnell.
So I felt bad. And again, it just goes back to my argument where I think, you know, again, I'm not talking about at a city level. God, homelessness, who the hell would want to try to solve that problem?
Well, let me ask you. Should local, state, federal do more to provide affordable housing?
Well, here's the thing. If it's for, well, we did that already. And I'll give you an example. I grew up in the Bronx. And ironically, a lot of these buildings were built by Trump's father. I don't know if you knew that. A lot of the housing projects in New York City, he got those construction contracts in the boroughs. I don't know if you were aware of that. And it turned into a mess. And here's why. We were doing something good. So New York City took all this money with the help of New York State and the feds, and they built housing projects. And now you had increased high crime areas. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So where the failure was, it was like, all right, let's build these big brick-and-mortar structures, like a filing cabinet, literally, and put human beings there who are impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give them no access to rehab, education, jobs, entry-level, and mid-level growth potential.
So
and let's see what happens. Well, what do you think happened in the housing projects in New York City? Well, let's see. Crack was invented there 10 years later in the 80s, and we all know
so
how that
went. So
we
tried a Band-Aid for the symptom.
Exactly. But that was no cure.
We didn't go far enough to find the root of the
correct
problem.
Correct. Okay. I think, yeah. So building filing cabinets again. Well, again, we built the filing cabinets in the 70s.
So you want to see even more.
And in the 80s, I want to see solution-based problems where, okay.
So you want to see career counselors
thing,
in there,
mental
drug
health. First, we got to invest more in mental health. And again, I'm an overtaxed middle-class American.
Again, that was one of the things under Obamacare, and Trump's trying to get rid of that.
I did. If that is the case, and that's verified, I'm in total disagreement with
Look
the president,
it up.
And it's unacceptable.
Look it up.
It's unacceptable because I'm telling you, I know this for a fact. Something I went to a very liberal college. SUNY New Paltz is probably one of the most liberal colleges in New York. I have researched this issue. If we can tackle the mental health issue behind homelessness, we will be able to make a difference. And again, those who are not able to work, okay, can't have them living on the street. They need a warm bed. They need food. I'm a taxpayer. I'll pay for that.
I'm with you.
You know, it is where it is. Those who can be helped and moved into a more mainstream environment, let's do that as well.
I think those who can be helped, look at it as a step up, and then they want to move on.
Exactly.
They don't want to live there forever.
But I think that's more of tackling poverty. People who are now in our nation, and please don't take this the wrong way, third generation, they've never set an alarm clock. They're living in poverty. They've never worked. They have no access to jobs. The educational structures in their community are ridiculous, for the lack of terms. So now what's the next step? Those are the filing cabinets we built in the 70s that had failed.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You got to do the drug counseling. You got to do the mental health.
Yep.
Got to do the career counseling.
You know, it'll cost us less than imaginary fines.
It always costs us less.
And if you think about the other work police can be doing, and those are especially in the freaking urban areas, you know, real problems. Okay,
you probably wouldn't need as many police.
They would make more money pulling over assholes like you who speed and can pay the ticket and don't have cop friends than they would finding fucking homeless people.
They gotta have cop friends.
So I'm serious.
PBA cards and cop friends. That's how I roll. With a radar detector, a GPS that tells me where the red light camera cars are. I am fucking going armed.
But
I'm
PBA
speeding.
Cards taped to your fucking window.
Absolutely. Listen, I know what type of unsavory element I am.
You bastard, you.
I most certainly am.
Oh, my God. It's funny
I am flagrantly
shit.
Breaking the law.
Yeah, man. But, yeah, building file cabinets for human beings isn't the answer.
All right, so one company is actually trying to make a difference with the homelessness. Google, I'll play that.
Now, Google making a big-time pledge for Bay Area housing. The tech giant says it will invest $1 billion to help tackle the crisis. Google says that over the next 10 years, it will repurpose at least $750 million of its land as a residential housing. Right now, most of it is zoned for office or commercial space. Google says the change will enable it to support the development of at least 15,000 new homes, including options for middle and low-class, low-income families. The second part of Google's plan is to establish a $250 million investment fund, which would provide incentives for developers. The goal, to build at least 5,000 affordable housing units across the market that would be available in the next few years. Google also says it will give $50 million in grants to nonprofits focused on homelessness and...
All right, so let me give you a couple more. So that will cover 68% of the housing region needs to build to keep up with housing demands. There's a lot of lost time to make up for, despite the Bay Area adding 373,000 new jobs from 2012 to 2016. Mm-hmm. Only 58,000 new housing units were permitted during that period. Mm-hmm. So you got some red tape right there.
Yeah, they'll fix that.
Silicon Valley Rising, an organization raising awareness about the housing crisis, has devastated the region's low-wage workers, applauded Google's announcement. Big tech corporations must take responsibility for their impact so working families have the freedom to stay and thrive in our community. San Francisco proper, which now has the highest rents of any city in the world.
Yes.
Critics of the unresolved housing crisis also point to policies that leave the region ill-equipped to manage its explosive growth. Laws in San Francisco, for one, have long prevented many high-volume housing developments from going forward and made it easy for neighbors to successfully oppose construction near them. Not in my
my backyard. Yep, NIMBY.
News of Google's investment comes as some other big tech players in the region are either going public or are rumored to be doing so, which would create a whole new class of billionaires essentially overnight. So we agree, Google's doing a great thing here.
Let me tell you, I love stories like this because when capitalists behave like that, you tell the socialists to go fuck off. They're not needed.
To an extent.
It's true, really.
That's true.
When capitalists behave like that, and that's the way they used to behave, a lot of them are stingy back in the day, but you know, if you think about all the big...
I think we might see more private businesses
doing
it. I don't know if it's a good thing, though.
I think it's great.
On the surface, it's great.
That's the way it should be, and that's the way it was in our country.
Well, there's something to be said. There's something to be
before
said
before the government
society.
Stepped in. Correct, and you know exactly. And that's what we should be seeing. When capitalists behave like that, you don't need the government to come in and fuck it up even worse.
But more often, we see capitalists come in and rape and pillage the land.
Yes, it happens. Listen, there's no perfect system, but right now, the human race has given us the United States of America and capitalism. That's as far as the species have gotten.
I just worry about certain.
I
worry about certain companies' ulterior motives, but on the surface...
Tax incentives, you said it.
On the
They write it off.
On the surface, looks brilliant.
They're giving the government less money to solve a problem for the government. I'm all for it.
Surface, it looks good.
Yeah, really.
We'll see how it pans out.
I love it. And you know what? They get something back. It's not corporate welfare. I know there's liberals listening to this show right now. No, this is capitalism working. You have excess. You invest back into the society.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what? So you'd either get a tax incentive or get more. They were talking about jobs. Job creation. Okay? Well, those people move up. Their kids go to college and go to work for Google one day. I'm giving you a picture-perfect example here, but you know what I'm saying? There's a flow to this where capitalism, although an imperfect way, it's as far as humanity has gotten so far, okay?
I think proven.
And, like I said, when capitalism works like this and when capitalists behave like this, you don't need the goddamn socialists.
I think this is an exception. I'd like to see more of it.
We need more of it.
But good on Google.
That's why the government... Lyndon Johnson, the Great Society. Okay, you don't need stuff like, you don't need blanket government programs like that if capitalists are going to do this, solve the problem themselves.
Here's a blanket government program which, as we've just been discussing so far, has been needed, but the Trump administration. What the Trump administration is trying to eliminate 3 million people. SNAP, food stamps.
Okay,
as we've talked about, it's needed. Unfortunately,
yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So the Trump administration wants to change the way states determine who qualifies for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP benefits, also known as food stamps. U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that 3 million people would lose their food assistance as a result. The administration says it wants to close what it calls a loophole that allows states to give benefits to those who would not otherwise be eligible by raising or eliminating income and asset limits. 40 states of Washington, D.C. now take advantage of this option and have done so for many years. Why, you ask? This proposal will not only save money, but more importantly, it preserves the integrity of the program while ensuring nutrition assistance programs serve those most in need. Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue said in announcing the proposed plan published in the Federal Register. At least it wasn't by tweet. His agency estimates the change would likely save $2.5 billion. All right. But proponents of the current system say it helps low-income families who work but have huge child care, housing, and other expenses that leave them with insufficient money to buy food. Child care is fucking ridiculously expensive.
I put through a daycare.
There's a lot of families that make the decision. It doesn't make sense for the a parent to go to work because they'd have to pay more in child care.
I am one of those families. I'll tell you a story. I don't know if your listeners, all your listeners know. I was widowed, okay, and I had two young children. At the time, the boys were 1 year old and 4 years old. My late wife and I had both of them in daycare, and we figured out two things. She was a career girl. It's her choice, okay? Left it up to her. I was like, I can't, you know, whatever you want to do, I'm going to back you. She didn't want to give up her career because she knew that the kids would one day get older.
And then she'd have to start over.
Correct. And she saw it happen. She saw it happen with other college-educated women who chose to stay home, as is their, you know, that's right, their right, that's their decision.
Yep.
And once the kids were old...
And it's a nice luxury if you can stay home.
Yes, it is. So, we figured out something. And again, you know me back then. I ran two companies, a dojo, I had 150 karate students, I was a marketing consultant, yada, 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 yada. So anyway, we figured out two things, my late wife and I. One... that our daycare bill was $300 a month more than our mortgage at the time we had two children. Now, don't get me wrong. It was partially our fault because my late wife being my late wife wanted to kind of feel good about the decision of being a working mom, and she found the best friggin' daycare in the county. Okay. So
hey, it's your kids, though.
Exactly.
You're not really, you shouldn't want to skimp on your kids.
Yeah, exactly. She shopped around. I mean, really, like, soup to nuts, kind of like, we could have saved some money here. Mm-hmm. Okay, but again... she felt guilty, actually came to me crying. I saw the emails 9 months after our second son was born and came to me crying, I'm a bad mother, I can't take this, this isn't for me, I want to go back to work, but I'm a bad mother. I'm like, you're not a bad mother. You are who you are, don't worry about it. You know, we'll work through this, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'll never forget that conversation. That's just something that sticks, even my mom, we're talking eight years later now, you know. So anyway, we figured out that one, with commuting, food, tolls, gas, car, all things considered, we were losing money for her to go to work. Two, once our second was born, the daycare bill was $300 a month more than our fucking mortgage. We were paying for two houses. So, to that point, I think in this environment where you have two working parents, okay, with children, you got to be very careful about what you cut from them.
Well, that's why the states give them the leeway.
Yeah,
well, all right, so let's continue. Yeah, and the government and wants to take that away.
They need, yeah, and that's my problem. Because my wife and I were fortunate. We were both good income earners. You know, like I said, I was running two companies. She had a sweet. She worked for a Fortune 500 company in Jersey. Mm-hmm. Life is good, okay? But still, even with us losing money with her going to work, like I said, I had a 150-student karate school, and I was a marketing consultant. So we were okay. You get two parents making, I don't know, what's an average these days? About, 40, 45, 50 grand?
Yeah.
You know?
Which is not a lot of money
it's
in this
not,
region.
It's really not. In the Hudson Valley, in Orange County, that's not a lot of money.
No.
You had three kids there, even two kids to that. That's a pinch.
If you have any type of property
that's
in, the, in this area, any type of property, you're going to pay, what, $15,000? Any type of property, $15,000?
You're in that area.
And now that's no longer under Trump's tax plan. That's no longer a write-off, by the way.
I know.
That used to be a write-off. It's not anymore. All right, so let me continue with this.
Go.
Proponents of the current system say it helps low-income families who work but have huge child care. All right, I read that. States now have the flexibility to not cut off benefits as soon as a family's gross income exceeds a certain level, but to more slowly phase out the food aid. Their current The current program also automatically qualifies 265,000 school children for free lunches. Under the administration's proposal, those children would have to apply separately to continue to get those meals. Well, just waiting. We're fucking red tape.
That's what I was just saying. Yeah, the bureaucracy to get nothing solved.
This rule would take food away from families, prevent children from getting school meals, and make it harder for states to administer food assistance, said Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, the ranking member of the Senate Agricultural Committee. Stabenow noted the Congress refused to include the proposal in last year's Farm Bill. This proposal is yet another attempt by this administration to circumvent Congress and make harmful changes to nutrition assistance that have been repeatedly rejected on a bipartisan basis.
Yeah.
So what Stabenow's saying is, hey, listen, yeah, this is something Democrats and Republicans agree on. Why are you trying to go around us?
Just leave it alone, right?
The proposed rule change is one of several the administration has made or is considering that restricts safety net programs for low-income individuals and families. The public has 60 days to comment on the proposal, and opposition is expected to be fierce. Anti-poverty groups see it as part of a much broader campaign by the Trump administration to push people off government aid even as they continue to face financial struggles. The change would likely face a legal challenge if it goes into effect. Right now, the law sets a gross income cap of 130% of the poverty line for SNAP recipients, about $33,000 for a family of four. That's not a lot of
pennies.
I mean, now
$33,000 a year.
Right, but I mean, now other parts of the country you can live a lot better than we can here. But still, it's not a lot of money.
Even down south, that's ungots. That's right. That's not a lot of money.
But states use something called broad-based categorical eligibility to allow families getting other assistance to receive some SNAP benefits, even if their incomes are as high as 200% of the poverty level, as long as they have other expenses that cut their net incomes below a certain level. Huh. So saying, all right, you get, you know, like child care.
Yeah, right on.
States like the option because it gives them more flexibility to help families that have fluctuating incomes and still have trouble buying food.
You get somebody who's a laborer who has to take a furlough.
Yeah.
You got a family of four. Ouch.
People don't. I think people assume that if you have a job, you're living well.
Correct.
It's not the case.
No.
That's why we have
I think most middle class who are just so fucking overtaxed right now have become desensitized to the fact that if somebody's working, they don't need my help. I think that's what's happened.
That's part of that.
I think the middle class has just gotten the shit. And you got to define middle class in this country carefully.
It's shrinking.
Not only is it shrinking, I think it's misdefined. I think, you know, a real middle class, you know, that's an income, you know, you're talking, I'd say 100 to, you know, 250,000 a year.
It's really combined? Middle
class. Yeah, because I'll tell you one thing. If you're a family of four in New York in the Hudson Valley and you even have a combined annual income of 65,000.
It's really tough.
You're hurting.
Yeah.
You know, if your car breaks, you're fucked.
These are working families who are just above SNAP income cutoff, said Stacey Dean, vice president for food assistance policy at the left-leaning Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. What the current system does is to say to workers that if you want to work a few more hours, you don't risk losing your SNAP because you take the extra shift. So yeah, it's getting people to work.
Yeah, an incentive to fucking work. What's the matter with that?
Dean notes that the change would also eliminate benefits for many seniors and individuals with disabilities who would cut off if their assets exceed $3,500.
That's a problem, yeah.
Many states have waived the asset limit because they argue it discourages low-income families from saving. So it's like, oh, shit, 34, got to spend it.
Exactly.
It's a huge administrative burden trying to keep track of recipients' bank account and other assets. But that also led to one high-profile. All right, so there was one time where, you know, there was fraud against it one time.
You're always going to have right. that. You know, you're dealing with government programs. People, that's going to happen.
So
you can't punish.
About 36 million people now receive monthly SNAP benefits. The number has declined steadily since 2013 when it exceeded 47 million. Remember, right around that, people lost their houses.
Yeah,
the banks fucked us
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So people are recovering over time.
Correct. Which still are.
I don't think people want to be on SNAP. There's the whole welfare queen thing that Reagan termed.
Yeah,
most people
the welfare
don't want
state,
that.
The welfare. They don't want that label.
But they call them welfare queens.
They don't want to hand out. Most people would rather have, again, when you're not dealing with, again, back to mental illness, when you're just dealing with poverty, I think most people would like a hand up.
Yes.
More than a hand
help out. Me help myself.
You know, as a taxpayer, again, my family's stretched. You know, I have 4 children at home. You know, I pay a shitload of money in taxes, obviously. I would say I'm even for, you know, the breakfast programs in school.
Oh, where they give you kids a breakfast?
A lot of people of my, you know, hey, I've got my fangs and bolts in my neck, white Republican NRA member, you know. Most of us don't talk like that, but I'm even for programs like that. You know, hey, if you're going to protest up and down, you know, save the baby, you got to feed the child.
Fair enough.
So that's just consistency.
I think one of the reasons we see cruel, and I'm going to call cruel things like this from this administration, is because people like Donald Trump and his cabinet, very rich, I'm going to hire the best.
They don't get it.
They've never been hungry.
Correct.
They don't even know people have been hungry.
I can, you know, as much, you know, like I said, I'm a Republican. I voted for him.
Well, most people would call you a rhino the way you're talking tonight.
A Republican
in name only.
No, actually, on some issues, I am very, what's considered conservative. If you get me on certain issues,
right?
Actually,
but now it's a purity test.
Both
sides have a purity test.
Correct. I'll. You get me on the right issue, and it's like, hold on, he's a white NRA member. You know, it's like, yeah, I'll confuse the fuck out.
Here's
of
another
you know?
Problem with this. Here's this, another problem. We just gave a tax cut to the rich. That's what it was. It was a tax cut to the rich, and now you want to adversely affect the poor? It just looks bad. There's no reason.
It was a tax cut, and again, I'm going to go back to the conservative side of me, to stimulate investment. To stimulate investment.
It doesn't work. Trickle-down economics doesn't work.
It has, unfortunately. And John F. Kennedy was the first one to do it, not Reagan, by the way.
Bush won called the voodoo economics, and he was right. And
he was Richard Nixon.
No, Bush.
Nixon was voodoo economics.
No, Bush was.
Nixon.
In the debate.
In the debate, Nixon coined the term.
All right. Well, whatever. But, and he was right. It cost him his second term.
No, he raised taxes.
Right, because he had to pay for the shit.
Because
he had to pay for all the taxes.
Well, what happened was, to be fair, Reagan cut taxes and didn't cut spending. Bush got elected, and it was like, fuck.
Yeah,
I gotta raise
he got caught. He got caught holding the bag.
But during his election, read my lips: no new taxes.
Listen,
that's why Bill
the
Clinton
president
got
knows this wasn't a middle class tax, and I'll tell you why.
But
that's what he called it.
It was a way to create middle class jobs.
But before that's what he wanted. But before the election in 2018, he said, "Right now, Congress is working on a brand new middle class tax." No, they weren't, and it tells you the first tax cut was bullshit, and then to do the bullshit tax cut, and then try to take it from the poorest among us, it's just so fucking wrong. It's cruel.
Well, to try to force people or phase people out of an assistance program that. Again, you know,
and a lot of these people are Trump voters, by the way.
You're talking about demographics, you know, where you live, income caps, and things of that nature. I think our nation still, again, you're talking about, for the most part, either rich people who don't get it,
mm-hmm.
or middle class people, such as you and myself, who are just so overburdened. It's like, yeah, if he's working, He's, you know, he's making it. You got, you know, you got a paycheck, you're good. You can feed your family, you know?
They don't get it.
We look at the money taken out of our paycheck.
It's a lot. Watch about my wife. I mean,
the little we get back.
Yeah. No,
it's you not. Know, the hours, the commuting costs.
Especially in this state.
The hours away from our family.
It's a lot.
A situation where you have two parents working, which is in the Hudson Valley, 80% of the families, both parents are working.
Yeah.
To survive here.
Which is another reason why we have a lot of the problems we have.
Yeah, correct.
Including maniacs with guns.
Correct.
That's another reason. There's so many reasons. That's another one. When nobody's at home.
The family structure has been broken down.
Yes,
latchkey.
It has.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most kids now are considered. We used to call them latchkey kids in the 80s. If you had that stigma, it was like you had a wart on your nose.
I remember,
remember that? Yeah. Old latchkey kids.
Everybody's a latchkey kid.
You can't
kid.
Say latchkey kid now.
Everybody's a latchkey kid. Yeah.
It's like saying the bearded man when everybody has a beard. Well, now you're just a man.
Right? All right. Yeah. So we agree. Again.
Yeah, again. Yeah, I'm not the conservative son of a bitch you think I am, huh?
No,
I has a heart.
No. I've just proven. I know you do. I've just proven that with
Bronx.
Trump, you got blood.
Yes, I
so here we go. We're gonna get really far left
when,
now.
When it comes to guns and it comes to capitalism and it comes to finance and being cautious with money like this and busting the fraudsters, because that's another thing.
Of course,
sensitizes the middle class and the voters.
But there's not a lot of them.
We have a problem here in the Hudson Valley, and every time it happens, it's all over the friggin' front page of the news. And
yeah, but they don't do a news story on the people that are playing by the rules.
That's the problem. You know, I would like to see success
Bad
stories.
News is always... Yeah, exactly.
All right. Exactly.
So now we're going to go far left on you, and then we're going to take a break.
No.
And now we're going to go far left on you.
Are
you familiar with Andrew Yang?
My Che Guevara t-shirt out now.
No.
Andrew Yang, yes.
He's one of the...
juxtaposition of Donald Trump. If you were a liberal...
What? Donald Trump used to be
the liberals found the pissed off billionaire.
No, that's Steyer.
Is it Steyer?
You're getting them confused. Yeah, Steyer's the one who is the impeached.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, different guy.
Andrew Yang's the businessman, right?
Yes.
He's a philanthropist, yada yada. Right. Yeah. All right.
So this is his plan.
Yes. What's the plan?
He will give every American, adult American, $1,000 per month.
For what?
No strings attached. Well, I'm going to explain the plan to you. Then we can
out of his pocket?
I'm going to explain it.
Or he uses another Robin Hood friggin'
not out of his, not out of his pocket.
Here we go. All right. It's a Robin Hood.
But here's the reasoning behind it. So we'll go through. So Yang is not the first to pitch the idea of universal basic income, or UBI. It's been tested everywhere from Scandinavia to Stockton, California.
Here we go.
The concept of a universal basic income stretching back to the American Revolution
era. You put on hoods and start shooting people with bows and arrows?
Are you going to fucking shut up? Shut the fuck up. So it goes back to the American Revolution era that every citizen in a given society receives a certain amount of money to spend on whatever they want. Of course, they can also save, invest the money depending on what their immediate needs are, long-term goals are. It is designed to fight poverty by putting cash directly in the hands of those who need it most.
Okay. You want to do that?
What?
I call it a fucking tax cut.
No.
Cut my FICA.
No.
Exactly.
Nah, this is more direct.
I don't want a direct check. I want to pay less in taxes so I can invest it.
All right, let's
cut my Social Security in half because I'm never going to see that fucking money. Nor will you, by the way. We're the same age. And, you give me that money so I can invest in a fund I want to. Anyway, go.
Thomas Paine's National Fund, out of which every citizen 21 years or older would receive £15 sterling, is one of the earliest proposals for universal basic income.
Here we go. The Greeks made this mistake too, by the way.
It's a very idea. It goes back to even before the founding of the country. It's an idea where every citizen of society gets a certain amount of money.
Bankrupt ancient Greece and Rome.
You're going to be surprised where they're doing something like this, by the way. A universal basic income in the United States would create millions of jobs and help Americans weather an unprecedented economic transition as technology and the rise of artificial intelligence automates and transforms the labor force, Yang has argued. Half of all work activities, including food service, manufacturing, retail, transportation jobs, are expected to be automated by 2055 or sooner. According to I can see that happening.
Yeah.
According to the McKinsey & Company. Putting money into people's...
fucking Terminator movie?
We're not far off.
Okay. You want to take away my gun? Thanks, prick.
You're not going to be able to beat the robot anyway.
When they come out, I'd rather have a 100-round mag than a fucking 5-round mag.
Don't
keep
worry.
Going anyway.
Laser's
going
to fucking blow you right between the eyes. You're done.
I want my own laser.
What?
Yeah, then I want a laser.
You don't get a laser.
I want a laser.
Putting money in people's hands, it's good for business, it's good for the economy, and it's good for markets.
Nah.
If you think about where Americans are going to spend that money, they're going to spend it at their local businesses, their main street economy. No, it's true.
If you're in Colorado, you'd be buying a pound of weed every month.
So be
Come
it.
On, Davin.
This is a great way to help supercharge businesses for the next number of years. This is the argument. You got to listen to it before you just...
I get it. I get the whole thing.
Studies also show that UBI can lead to improved health outcomes in children. No. As well as boost residents' health and well-being.
Uh-huh.
So in a test of the measure in Finland, recipients of basic income were found to have greater ability to concentrate than members of a control group.
They actually brought this down to science, this madness. They explained it scientifically. It's fucked up.
They were all... I'll give you all the science. Listen. They were also more confident in their future and in their ability to influence society issues. So you have a more engaged public, which is a good thing, which too many people, as we've been talking about, have checked out.
Yeah.
So this was done by Kela, a Finnish social services agency. Critics of the regular stipend argue that it's financially irresponsible and discourages work and investment. Some research also shows that it's expensive to fund compared to existing social welfare programs and leaves low-income families even worse off. Economists Hillary W. Hoynes and Jesse Rothstein estimate that $12,000 annual payment to every American adult over the age...
12,000.
Of 18 would cost about $3 trillion per year, about 75% of current total federal expenditures.
Fuck you.
Thus, implementing this UBI without cuts to other programs would require nearly doubling federal tax revenue.
Are we financing the friggin' new weed market? Come on.
So Yang's proposal would be funded by a 10% value-added tax, or VAT.
Oh, no, I don't want to hear that shit.
Have you ever paid a value-added tax?
Yes, I've traveled.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think the VAT showed up your ass. I paid down in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Even the locals get pissed off at that shit. You go to Atlantis, that's right. Yeah. Talk to one of the locals about a VAT.
But I'm not getting anything for the money.
Ungots!
Value-added
tax. You know what I mean? Bend over. That's what a value-added tax is.
On the production of goods and services that would generate $800 billion in annual revenue. A UBI at the level Yang proposes would expand the U.S. economy by roughly 13%.
Again, you're raising taxes.
He didn't say he's raising taxes.
A VAT is a tax raise.
It is.
Okay, yeah.
But according to according to the president, tariffs aren't taxes
either. I didn't want to talk about this.
Well, you're gonna.
It's horrible.
Would expand the U.S. So he says it would expand the economy by 13%.
No, it won't.
Or $2.5 trillion by 2025, and would increase the labor force by around 4.6 million people.
I would realign my portfolio to buy pot stocks if that ever happened, because that's where that money's going. All right.
This was done by the Roosevelt Institute.
Even 18-year-old.
No, that's
$1,000 a month to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Alaska.
Alaska, with a population of 3, but whatever.
It's not a blue state, though. It's very
It doesn't matter. Blue, red, purple, green. There's no population up there. But anyway.
For 37 years, paid its residents a dividend out of its petroleum.
Yeah, all 25 of them. Wow.
In 2018, every qualified Alaskan received $1,600 dividend, equaling a total disbursement of just over $1
billion,
according to the Alaska Oil and Gas.
$1 billion how long?
In 2018.
1 year. Okay. $1 billion spread out over a state that's half the size of our, bigger than half the size of our friggin' country, with the population of friggin' Middletown? Come on. It's a bad example.
So he put it to the test.
They're trying to put something ridiculous into a scientific context, which makes it sound even more fucking stupid.
So Yang put it to a test.
Oh, Yang. Yeah, Yang and I got to talk.
So he gave one New Hampshire resident, Chuck Fassey, $1,000 a month for 1 year to demonstrate how a UBI would work. Fassey, who is married and has a college-age daughter.
He gained 50 pounds by pizza, beer, fast food, and entertainment, as every other fucking American would do.
You got to shut up.
All right, go.
Thank you.
Okay.
Fassey, who is... Let me get through it.
I get through it before I piss all over.
Fassey, who is married and has a college-age daughter, said he is spending the stipend on basic needs like food and to help pay his daughter's tuition bills so that she graduates debt-free from college. We both know that. You know more than I do. Got more kids than I do.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
I'm going to die on the job. I'm never retiring.
The city of Stockton, California, this year began testing a pilot program that distributes $500 a month to approximately 100 residents, making it the country's first government-led experiment.
And what demographic, though?
I don't know how they did that.
Exactly.
Stockton resident Thomas Vargas said the stipend helps him afford groceries, electricity bills, and his kids' tuition and tutoring fees. He also is investing some of the cash cushion to prepare for a future without free money.
Uh-huh.
It gives me an opportunity to sit there and make sure I have a monthly dividend after it ends.
Uh-huh.
Full results of Finland Universal Basic Income Trial are due in 2020, but preliminary results show that it did not lead to gains in employment. It did, however, improve beneficiaries' health and well-being. Okay. So it's interesting. It's certainly interesting.
Do you ever see Billy Madison?
Years ago.
Yeah. That is the most insane thing I have ever heard in my life.
What would
may God have mercy
so
on his soul.
If you and your wife,
first of all,
if you and your wife got
anytime you hear VAT, it's called a friggin' tax increase.
That's a value
increase in tax. So you're taking more money from people to pay for something,
but you're giving it
right
to people.
There. You dumb.
You're giving it to people.
So you're taking money and you're giving money.
Well, think about what could
okay,
you.
Okay, so that makes sense. So
what could you?
You're taking money from me to give me back $1,000.
Listen, what could you and your wife do for your family with an extra $24,000 a year?
An extra $24,000 a year.
Because you each get $1,000.
Okay. But if the VAT is costing me $40,000 a year, my answer to you is not a fucking thing.
Well, it's only on certain
And you
goods.
Know what? I know you had all your pie-in-the-sky scientific examples that they so comfortably provided. I want to see what happens to the people I know personally, and so do you, who couldn't save five fucking dollars if you glued it to their wallet. Or would spend that $1,000 on fast food and weed.
Well, all right, but the
or DVDs.
Well, but here's
or
the
Amazon movies. Gavin, come on.
Here's Yang's argument
you're
for that.
About American stupidity with something like this, and it doesn't go together.
Well, why isn't that stimulating the economy? I mean, Yang is saying people are going to spend it on
it's
Main Street.
It's not going to help people. They're going to spend it on, like
well,
I
businesses
said,
are doing,
they're either going to buy weed,
you don't
beer,
know that.
Or entertainment.
No, you just.
I'm an American. I know it.
No. But
and, I don't want to pay the VAT. To fund that shit. I'm sorry. I don't want to pay it.
I think
it's not going to cost my wife and I $24,000 a
no,
year.
No, you get $24,000.
Yeah, we're going to get $24,000 a year, but with a VAT tax, it's going to be double. Fuck that. That's
I think
pie
need,
in the sky.
I think you need more numbers behind
it's
it.
It's a Ponzi scheme. I don't even want to call it, but it's not dignified enough to be called a Ponzi scheme. It's not going to work. It's a stupid idea.
Well, I mean, Alaska seems to like it.
Alaska's got ungots of the population. They all write about the petroleum.
I got to tell you right now, if we got an extra $2,000 a month,
yeah,
it would make a big difference.
Really?
Yes.
If you had if that $2,000 a month transferred into another extra $2,500 a month in VAT tax, every time.
But I don't know. I would have to do the math.
Every time you bought food, every time you bought clothes, you traveled around. You've been around the world too. So have I. Every time I see VAT on a bill, I'm here. You motherfuckers.
So
you know, come on, man.
So what happens if we didn't give it to everybody? Say we give it to everybody who's making arbitrarily less than $1 million.
Less than $1 million.
Pick a number. Pick a number that you wanted.
If I wanted, if I'm going to pay a tax to help out somebody, it's going to be like the people we spoke earlier. It's going to be a hungry kid, a homeless vet,
all right,
a person
so what
in poverty,
should it be? All right, so what should it
somebody
be?
Who's fucking insane
who should
and
get
can't
the
get a
money?
Job.
Who should get the money? Instead of every American adult, who should get the money? What would make it right? Give me a number.
What would make it right? The people we were discussing earlier. Fix the goddamn programs we already have. Put the right people in the place that have more solutions-oriented programs to where we're not building filing cabinets for homeless, mentally insane people, or veterans who can't acclimate back into society.
So let's say we did it. We gave
VAT
we
tax,
gave
shut the fuck out.
We
of
gave
with that stuff.
Families $500
for what?
Listen, $500 who are under $40,000 combined income.
Uh huh.
$500 makes a big difference. So a lot of us will say a lot of us are picking up that tab.
Okay.
Well, to take your argument, we're paying for shit, but we're helping out other people. We're getting them back on their feet so they can contribute more to society.
But, like, yeah, you got to remember though, you got to discuss the people, not just the feel good stories that you highlighted. Again, the people who couldn't save $5 if you glued it to their friggin' wallet, and they're gonna spend that on fast food and entertainment. Which is the majority of friggin'
well,
Americans,
still
man.
Well, hold on. First of all, you know. Wait, people that are poor deserve to have a night of entertainment.
I get that. No, you're misreading what I'm saying. I'm talking about poverty. I'm not talking about people who are struggling. Okay? We all struggle.
Well, they gave a couple cases. Again, they might be cherry-picked.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Dude, that's so fucking cherry-picked.
But what I'm telling you is I would not be spending that money on McDonald's and weed. Honestly, that money would probably get saved for my daughter's college.
Yeah, but it would come with a piece of small print. You are a professional comedian. Your wife is a working professional. And that VAT thing that's going to pay for all this might not be worth it for you.
Right, that's why I said you need more numbers. You need more numbers.
Dude, the whole idea about universal income, it makes you're creating a class of dependent people.
That's the
Again,
danger.
It's the file
That's
cabinet.
The danger. Is it too
it's
much dependence?
You're back to the housing projects that failed that were built. You're building a filing cabinet for people instead of fucking helping them. So that's not a solution. I'm sorry. That is not a solution.
I think for some people it could help.
No, I
don't know.
I would rather see the programs right now
I don't know if the
be mad.
But not everybody has access to these programs.
I know, no shit. That's the problem. They need to be. If we're gonna,
so
have,
you would pay a value added tax if there.
I don't ever want to see a value added tax in the United
States. Taxes are taxes. Whatever.
If I ever see a VAT, I'm gonna fucking lose my mind and be on Facebook every day saying fuck everybody.
So they all right. So say they raised. So say they raised your income tax 4%. Whatever.
To pay for, like I said. I'm not worried about. Listen, I got four kids. I'm gonna struggle like a motherfucker. I'm never gonna be able to retire. But the truth of it is, it's just, David, it's pie in the sky, man. It really is.
I think it's a unique idea.
You can call it unique.
You know what?
I prefer the word horseshit. But yeah, it's unique.
I think Yang is a little too soon on this because we haven't seen all the studies. I'd like to see how it works other places, what they found.
No.
The fact that it hasn't added to employment.
It's preparing the human race to become dependent on the leaders, on government. I don't like the idea. It's not a solution.
We're doing that to our farmers.
I think it's a bank. What we're doing, our farmers are caught in a nasty trade war right now. And it's
right,
really
and we're paying them
because
we're paying them.
That's what we're paying them off.
And it's not
revolt.
Even the rank and file farmers. It's the corporate farmers.
No, it's not just, it's everybody. It's farming.
No. I'm saying the money.
Yeah, you know how many billions of dollars of soybeans are going to rot?
Right. But this goes back to paying people. You know, you're concerned. Right now, we're paying people not to work. And they're not happy about it.
No, they're not. But, you know, we're paying farmers right now, not the revolt. It's a big difference.
No, that you know what? That's what Trump's doing. But I'll tell you, that's exactly what he's doing.
We did not expect the Chinese to devaluate their currency.
Well, whose fault is that, then?
No, it's got the
he was warned trade wars don't work.
Trump's a double-edged sword.
He's an
For
idiot.
The first time since Reagan, we can actually say our guy is crazier than the other guy. It's,
I don't like that. That's not a good thing.
It's like the dictators around the world. Remember Gaddafi? Gaddafi is like, oh God, we don't want to fucking.
Reagan
bombed his fucking house.
Yeah,
dude.
That's fine.
He whacked him.
I'm good with that.
But I'm just saying. For the first time, sitting out there, I'm calling Trump Reagan Trump. But I'm saying though, like I said, for the first time,
Trump is not Reagan on his worst day.
We're looking
on Reagan's
back
worst day.
Like, wow, like the American leader is just as crazy as the other motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's not good. Because America is looked at as the fucking stabilizing factor. That's not good.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
What's fucked our country up too and cost us trillions of dollars around the world is that we're expected to clean up all these other governments' mess.
It's a different thing.
Because Big Brother America is always going
to
come and help us.
My point is right now we're currently paying people not to do something.
I get what you're saying. Okay, right now if the farmers get too pissed off, they're going to drive up food prices here locally. So you get an inflationary situation.
Farmers will tell you.
And this happened too with Obama with the whole ethanol thing. We've already endured it.
This is not a temporary problem. The farmers are fucked. We're fucked, and I'll tell you why, and then I'm going to take a break.
All right.
Because now China and other countries, they're buying their soybeans from other places.
There's not too many places.
They're buying them from Russia.
No, there's not too many.
Yes, they are.
Russia still depends on us for wheat, for crying out loud.
If you listen to the farmers, they're concerned because it's like now that they're going someplace else, there's no guarantee they're going to come back to us.
I'm sure the communists who do still run Russia would gladly starve a few of their cities to make money off Chinese, charge them four times as much as soybeans than the American tariffs would hit them with. But the issue with that is, if the farmers pull back production, and this happened under Obama too, with his old ethanol pie-in-the-sky environmental solutions that were supposed to save the world, and they haven't done a fucking thing.
Ethanol was never good because it was made from corn.
Well, you know what the problem was? Food prices went up because grain prices
went up. Right, it was bad.
And
better
what happens when
energy.
Grain prices go up, meat prices go up.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
The guys who eat the meat.
It was faulty logic.
Yeah, it was. It really was because, everything just went up. That's why if you go to now, here we are, 10 years post Obama, 11 years post Obama here, and it wasn't his, he was put into this situation to the left-wing environmental agenda. And as a result, when you leave ShopRite with four bags of groceries, it hits $115. It used to be $70.
You know, food.
It is. It really is. It's gotten worse. But what I see here happening is, the American government right now is doing what I call a GM. Bailing out the farmers because if those farmers pull back production.
He also doesn't want the fucking images of a bunch of homeless farmers on the news every night.
That wouldn't help his political aspirations either.
That's why they
voted for him, too.
I guarantee you, if the farmers lived in Manhattan, they would not be getting aid. All right. We'll take our last break. When we on the break, you got Raymond Ray featuring MC Dura with This Is My Bay, and you can learn more about them at khb-music.de. One short break. We'll be right back.